You are listening to Books Are My People, a podcast for book lovers with book news, recommendations, and ruminations on living a literary life in Los Angeles. This is episode 78, and I'm recording on June 6th. Hello! If you're tuning in for the first time, welcome! I'm Jennifer Calogeras, and however you found your way to the podcast, I'm so happy you're here. If you're a returning listener, did you like last week's bonus episode of my time over at The Perks of Being a Book Lover? Send me an email and let me know. You can reach me at booksaremypeople@gmail.com. I have to warn everyone, I was super sick when I recorded this interview with our guest today. I was having really bad allergies for a week, and it felt like someone was living inside my head and kicking me from the inside. And then that spiraled into a sinus infection with all the colors of the rainbow for Pride Month. I ended up on antibiotics, which was all relatively low stakes, except for the fact that I was in Irvine Memorial Day weekend, carting my 13-year-old around to his hockey tournament, which was actually really, really fun, but I should have been in bed. So I'm pretty spent this week. The end of the school year always feels so hectic, and this year is no different, but I'm really looking forward to summer, and I would love to hear what you all are reading this summer. I'm running a new book giveaway. This one is for End of the World House by Adrian Kelt. I recommended this book on episode 76 if you want to hear more about it, but basically it's about two best friends, Kate and Birdie, and they get caught in this sort of Groundhog Day time loop in the Louvre Museum in Paris. And if you liked Emma Straub's This Time Tomorrow, I think you'll enjoy this book, or maybe you can gift it to someone who you think will enjoy it. To enter, go to my Instagram page at Jennifer Calogeras. You can also find me by searching for Books Are My People. Find the post that features End of the World House, follow me, and leave a comment on that post. You can tag bookish friends for extra entries and also add to your stories for an additional entry. This giveaway is open to U.S. mailing addresses only and will close on Sunday, June 19th. I will notify a winner on the 20th. And like I said, if you're on the fence about whether or not you want to win this book, go and listen to episode 76 to hear more about it. And now it's time for some bookish news. So my news today consists solely of book-to-film adaptations. Since I live in LA, it feels appropriate. Charlotte Perkins Gilman's most famous short story, The Yellow Wallpaper, is being turned into a feature-length film. The story was first published in 1892. I think I last read it around 2004. It's a haunting tale of motherhood and how postpartum depression used to be treated as madness. And it brings up issues for me around questions about whether or not you can like the art, but not the artist. I am certainly much more amenable to this idea when the artist is no longer living and profiting off of said art. The cast of Room on a Lam's Leave the World Behind has expanded. I think the last time I talked about it, I mentioned Julia Roberts, Mahershala Ali, and Ethan Hawke in the mix, and now Kevin Bacon and Farrah McKenzie will also join. I first recommended this book on episode 36 if you want to hear more. Elizabeth McCracken's The Giant's House is being turned into a feature film. I'm so excited about this. It will be adapted by Nick Hornby, and this is a book about a librarian and an unusually tall man and the friendship they forge and the journey they take together. It's so, so wonderful. Go read it. I'm definitely going to read it again before seeing this movie. And HBO is developing a limited series based on my favorite Toni Morrison novel, Sula. It will be written by Shannon M. Houston, who worked on Station 11 and Little Fires Everywhere. Again, another excuse to give a book a reread before watching the adaptation. And that's all I have for news today. From living alone in her parents' hardware store in Brooklyn to living a mile down a gravel road in semi-rural Texas with her husband, sons, and the local wildlife, Eva Silverfine has explored a variety of urban to rural landscapes. On that journey, she earned 2 degrees in the environmental sciences, worked in a research lab, and eventually retooled as a copy editor. She freelances for several academic presses and writes personal narrative and fiction in the in-between spaces. In addition to her recently published novel, How to Bury Your Dog, she is also the author of Elastic Walls, From Brooklyn to Texas and Points in Between, a memoir in vignettes. So hello, Eva.
Well, hello there. It's great to speak with you.
Where are you calling in from today?
I am in San Marcos, Texas, which is just west of San Marcos, Texas, which is between Austin and San Antonio.
Well, you are stuck with my allergy voice today. This is not my typical podcast voice, but I have had what I am describing as an allergy bomb detonated in my brain a week ago. Something is blooming in California that my body does not like. So my first question for you is, when did you know you were a writer?
There are two iterations of that. One was when I was about 10 or 11 years old, and I was walking out of my local branch of the Brooklyn Library thinking, this is what I want to do. I just love the immersive, intimate world that I found when I was reading, and it was something I wanted to do too. But you know, that sort of got pushed to the back burner. I would do it eventually. And then when I was working on my master's degree in ecology in my mid-20s, I met an old friend, and they sort of reminded me of what I had talked a lot about as an adolescent. And it just clicked that this is something I did really want to do. And so that's when I began to try to write fiction. I had been keeping a journal, and I was a prolific letter writer. But that's when I turned my hand towards fiction. And, you know, it's still taken me a good while to start getting things out, but I'm finally there.
And how did you get the idea for your novel, How to Bury Your Dog? And if you also could tell us a little bit about your latest novel.
That idea came from a story a friend told me. And as you know, writers steal things all the time, ideas. And the fleshing out of it did come from pretty much a lifetime interest in the natural environment and preserving the natural environment. So the story is of a woman who has sort of self-circumscribed her life, and on the day she buries her longtime pet, she learns that a major development is going into her back, basically her backyard, and it's a very special place with a relic stand of hemlocks and a beautiful pond. And although she's reluctant to become involved, she, over the course of the novel, becomes involved in the fight against this residential development.
This is a really moving, heartfelt, and quiet novel, and I say this as high praise. As a novel writing instructor, I love working on what I refer to as quiet novels because I appreciate the subtleties and the nuance. And I'm wondering, as you worked on this, how aware were you of the ways in which you continued to raise the stakes while maintaining a level of what I describe truly as literary reverie?
I'm going to call what you call literary reverie pondering. I do a lot of pondering. That's my sort of natural way of thinking. And so as I do those ponderings, though, in the context of the novel, I paid attention to making sure they serve the purpose of telling us more about the characters and also reflected the broader story and moved the story along. What's more challenging for me is the story, moving the storyline, getting from A to B to C. So in part, the structure that I chose for the book helped with this. I had decided early on it would take place over the course of the year, and I was able to divide that into the seasons. And then it was making sure that there's really three main characters in the book, and I worked on making sure they were all moving along their individual character arcs. So to balance that sort of reflective pondering with moving the story along, if you drive a manual car, or if you ever have, I sort of liken it to, finding that place where you let out the clutch and put your foot on the gas and finding that balance, hoping you don't stall out.
There's an obvious love of and respect for animals in this novel of yours, so I have to ask, do you have any pets?
Do chickens count?
Yes, I have chickens. They absolutely count.
Right now, all we have are chickens. Lots of chickens at the moment. Too many roosters. But yes, over my lifetime, yeah, I grew up, we had dogs. Once I was out on my own, I tended more toward cats. And I've always had cats, except right now, we're actually taking a break and we don't have any cats. I don't know if that's going to be permanent or not. But when I was growing up, we had quite a variety of pets. And when my kids were younger, we had a variety of pets. So, yes, there have been pets in my life.
So I'm in the middle of Los Angeles, and we're not allowed to have roosters in the city because of the noise, obviously. But since you have roosters, do you have a lot of baby chicks happening?
Well, that's part of why you end up with roosters. Yes, we do. We have both larger breeds, but we also have a bunch of bantams, which are a small breed of chicken, and we sort of let those start raising chicks. And when you do that, you end up with too many roosters, which is always perplexing for us. We've given away a couple, but we, as I said earlier, we have too many, and I'm not sure how we're going to handle. There's only so many roosters you can have at the same time.
I was reminded of, I don't know if you're familiar with this song, by the singer-songwriter Victoria Williams called Happy Come Home, about her dog. Are you familiar with that?
No.
So the dog in your novel is named Happy, and I kept thinking about that song. Yeah, you should listen to it. It's a very long, it's almost operatic in a sense. It's not a conventional song, but it takes you on a journey of her dog that runs away. But I thought of you, and I thought of that song. In this novel, aside from Lizzie, the animal-loving protagonist, you've also chosen to include two different boys, a teenager, Jonas, who appreciates nature in his own right, and 10-year-old Timmy, who's grappling with making good choices. I'm curious what made you decide to include not one, but two representations of youth in your novel.
The three main characters in this book, Lizzie, Timmy, and Jonas, all started as separate stories. They were sort of characters in search of a home, I guess, although Lizzie was pretty tied to this, became tied to the storyline pretty early on. So I had these three characters that I was developing stories about or character portraits of, and to be honest, I don't really remember how I put them in there together. And now that they're in there together, I can't quite imagine it otherwise. Of course, they all evolved from who their separate stories and who they were in those stories somewhat, Jonas the most. But now they're together, they seem to belong together. And to some extent, Jonas and Timmy do sort of help one another along the journey that they take over the course of the novel.
The sense of place throughout your pages almost acts as a character itself. Was there particular inspiration for the depictions of this idyllic countryside?
Well, the location is fictional, but it is very much based on time I've spent both in North Carolina and Virginia, probably leaning a bit more toward North Carolina in the Piedmont. Just when I visualize it in my mind, that's sort of the not deep south, southeast location that I'm familiar with. But that special place that all three characters are trying to protect in their community, the pond and the bluffs, comes from an actual place in North Carolina that I think was called Hemlock Bluffs. And I've embellished it a bit, but in North Carolina, there was this relic community of hemlocks on a bluff that overlooked a creek. And I used to take my general ecology labs there. So I just sort of made it bigger and added some plants to it and a pond instead of a creek. And so that's where that part of the countryside came from.
And what are you working on next?
I have a rough draft of a speculative fiction novel waiting for me to return to it. I have found that this last year or two, I've been kept very busy by work, but also by the whole process of bringing this novel out and the production and promotion of it. And I have another novel that will come out in October of this year. So I'm currently focused on the production and promotion of that one.
I find it ceaselessly interesting to hear authors speak about their process and inspiration. So thank you for doing so today. We will be back in just a minute to share our book recommendations. I am so excited that I get to share information about today's sponsor with you because it's a product I actually use myself and believe in, Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I'm focused on my health this year, running, eating right, and putting things into my body that supports these goals. I'm not a fan of vitamins. They leave me with a terrible aftertaste. You know what I'm talking about. So what is AG1? It's a scoop of deliciousness containing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens. It's now part of my morning routine and allows me to start my day off right. It provides me not only with the physical energy to get through the day, but also with the mental acuity I need for all of the novel writing, book reading, and instruction I pack into my day. AG1 is lifestyle friendly, whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free. With Athletic Greens, you're investing in an all-in-one nutritional insurance, and for every purchase, they donate to organizations helping to get nutritious food to kids in need, including No Kid Hungry here in the U.S. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/emerging. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/emerging to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Eva, why don't you start us off with your first pick?
My first pick is a novel entitled Greenwood by Michael Christie that came out in 2020. And I think Greenwood is a beautifully crafted novel. It follows a family, and an aspect of the book is what is family. But it follows this family back four generations, and it does so as if taking a core of the rings of a tree from a near future in which the majority of trees have withered because of climate change. And it goes back to the early 20th century when Canada still offered virgin forests. So each generation in the book is intimately tied to trees in some way, starting with in the past from lumbermen to environmental activists to woodcraftsmen to in the present or near future, I'm sorry, a woman who's a botanist. And this story at heart is about people, each somewhat broken by their history and their circumstance. The connections to trees is intimate and lyrical, and it's an engaging story with beautiful writing. The book is Greenwood by author Michael Christie.
Excellent. I hadn't heard of that book. I do have an eco-warrior cousin who lives in Canada, and she's an environmental activist, and she actually lived in the trees in British Columbia for, I think it was over a week before she was arrested trying to protect the old growth trees, and she was doing sort of Instagram lives from the trees. It was harrowing and tough to see her up there, but I admire her efforts. Absolutely. My next pick is also about family, about how messy family can be, how complicated family can be. And it's called All the Things We Don't Talk About by Amy Feltman. And this came out on May 24th. This was such a wonderful and intriguing book. It starts out very dramatically with a student who brings a gun to Morgan and Sadie's high school, which feels, of course, all the more loaded today on the heels of the recent tragedy in Texas. Luckily, this weapon is confiscated, but the students are really shaken up after having been evacuated. And it's during their evacuation that students Morgan and Sadie strike up a friendship. They're both on financial aid. Morgan identifies as non-binary and lives with their neurodivergent father, Julian, after their alcoholic mother, Zoe, left them and headed to Europe when Morgan was only one. Soon, Sadie and Morgan begin to develop feelings for one another, and this is disrupted by Zoe, the absent mother's, sudden return to the States. And more specifically, Zoe just shows up at her kid's home unannounced. What Morgan doesn't know is that their father has developed this epistolary relationship with Bridget, Zoe's ex, who is living abroad. Morgan really grapples with wanting to get to know this person, their mother, that's been missing their whole life. But also having their mother back in Morgan's life is beguiling and dangerous and really confusing. This is a unique book about family and relationships and navigating the messy truths about life. And thank you to Grand Central Publishing and to NetGalley for the advanced review copy. And again, that is All the Things We Don't Talk About by Amy Feltman. Eva, what is your second pick?
Well, my second pick is Appleseed by Matt Bell, and it may sound a little like my previous recommendation, and it's just that I happen to read these two very closely together, but they're both great books, and they're very different. So Appleseed is part myth, part legend, part dystopian future, and all underlying social commentary. It's an imaginative, sobering, and fascinating story, but it also is one that prods us to reflect about our own complicity in environmental harm. It speaks to humanity's incessant want, our country building itself on taming the wild and consuming its natural resources, and also our continuing mindset to put off fixing the damage until sometime in the future. So the story itself follows three timelines. One story is set in the early 18th century and is based on the legendary Johnny Appleseed, hence the title, but imbues him with even a greater mythic aspect, making him part human, part fawn. The present-day story, again, a little bit in advance, further along in the 20th century, is the United States and world that is much reduced due to climate change again. And in this world, the mega corporation has been using its power and its technology to create its own vision of the future. Far Distance tells the story of a being no longer quite human who has been reproduced technologically over 400 times and is on a quest to understand who he is and what he is becoming by searching for any other remnants of humanity. This is a fascinating, well-written, and thought-provoking read. That is Appleseed by Matt Bell.
So Appleseed has been on my TBR list for quite some time because I read Refuse to be Done, How to Write and Rewrite a Novel in 3 Drafts, which I recommended on this podcast on episode 73. And I don't know if you've read that one, but it's really one of the best writing reference books that I've ever read. I highly recommend it.
Do you ever wish you could sit in on a conversation with some of your favorite authors and listen to them talk about their writing process, their path to publication, and of course, their newest novels? Hi, I'm Marissa Meyer, bestselling author of The Lunar Chronicles, and I would love for you to check out the Happy Writer podcast, where every week I talk with other writers about books, craft, inspiration, and how to bring a little more joy into our lives. The Happy Writer is available wherever you get your podcasts, or find us on Instagram at Happy Writer Podcast.
You know, I have heard of it, and the Writers League of Texas, I believe, which I'm a member of, was doing a workshop with him that I really would have wanted to do, except it was on a day that I absolutely couldn't do it. But I will make sure I get to that.
I don't think I'll ever write a novel in 3 drafts, but if I can minimize the drafting at all, then it's absolutely worth it. And as an instructor, he just had so many gems that I could pass along to my students. But my final pick today is The Lost Apothecary by Sarah Penner, and this came out in 2021. This story uses a dual timeline, and I love stories with dual timelines. The first storyline is about Nella, who's living in London in 1791. She's inherited the secret apothecary from her mother at Three Back Alley, and her mother has since passed away, but the store lives on. The store doesn't really look like a store at all, but a barren storefront with nothing but a barrel of grain. But it serves a much larger purpose because in this barrel of grain, women come in and hide envelopes containing the names of the men they wish to retribute who have done them harm. And Nella's job is to find the right poison to punish and often kill these men. Nella's motto has always been to do absolutely no harm to women. She's definitely burdened by the fact that no matter how awful these men are to the women who come to her store, in the end, she is a murderer, and she has to reconcile that. For example, a woman comes to her wanting to kill her husband, who's been having an affair. So Nella keeps track of every woman who comes in, their personal situation, and what she used to harm each of the men in a ledger that was originally started by her mother. The second narrative revolves around Caroline, who is in present-day London. She's married to an American and is visiting London on vacation, but she wasn't supposed to be there alone. She was supposed to be there with her husband, James, but she recently found out that James has been having an affair. She has some definite regrets about her life choices, specifically having given up an acceptance to graduate school in Cambridge in order to stay in the States with James. So she's come on this trip to London alone. She's wandering the city and decides to go mudlarking, searching for buried treasure in the Thames with a tourist group. And it's there where she discovers a small glass vial, of course, connected to Nella in the 1700s. The two narratives weave back and forth in time and explore the lives of these two women, the men who have betrayed them, and the choices they are forced to make. Unique, engaging, definitely for people who like historic narrative, or maybe they just want to dip their toe in a little historic narrative, but because of the modern day storyline, you don't have to fully immerse yourself. I loved it, and apparently it is being developed into a TV show. And again, that is The Lost Apothecary by Sarah Penner. Eva, what is your last pick today?
My last pick is Properties of Thirst by Marianne Wiggins, and it will be out in August of 2022. It was an ARC from NetGalley from Simon & Schuster. And I was interested in picking it up because I think of Marianne Wiggins' Evidence of Things Unseen as one of my favorite all-time novels. Properties of Thirst is set in the Owens Valley of California as the United States enters World War II. The plot is centered around the redistribution of water resources from this rural community to Los Angeles. That is the Aqueduct Project. And the creation of the Manzanar internment camp for Japanese Americans. The latter story is told from the perspective of the person sent to set up the camp rather than that of the internees. In the story, it's the characters that absorb us. There's Rocky, who's battling Los Angeles over what he considers the theft of his water. Living with him is his sister Cass, who is a manly-sized, intelligent, and independent woman who has cared for his twin niece and nephew since the death of their mother, who was Rocky's wife. The daughter, Sunny, is now a young woman and has grown up trying to fill the void that should have been her relationship with her mother. And her brother, Stryker, who is lost at Pearl Harbor, is known through the other characters and is portrayed as fearless as well as somewhat reckless. Into the lives of this somewhat unconventional and eccentric family arrives Shift, a first-generation, urban, Jewish-American lawyer sent from the Department of Interior to set up the internment camp, an irony not lost on him. What I appreciate most about this novel is the intelligence and depth with which Marianne Wiggins brings her story to us. And as with any good book, we feel the losses of the characters and hope for their fictional future. The book, again, is entitled Properties of Thirst by Marianne Wiggins.
I will definitely be requesting this one on NetGalley. It's a really timely subject matter as we are being restricted to 8 minutes of water per day per person starting June 1st. That's it from this week. If you want to reach out and say hi and tell me what you're reading, you can find me at booksaremypeople@gmail.com. Eva, where can people find you on social media?
I use my name for everything, which is Eva Silverfine, which is S-I-L-V-E-R-F-I-N-E, just like it sounds. I have a website, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, I'm on LinkedIn, and I don't really spend any time on Twitter, but I'm there too. But I did want to mention that I'm having a Kindle promotion of How to Bury Your Dog is running from June 12th through June 18th. If any of your listeners are interested in picking up a copy for their Kindle at 99 cents.
That's amazing. What a treat for listeners. 99 cents to listen to today's author. Excellent. I will link up to Eva's social media in the show notes section, all of her social media, as well as to the Kindle promotion so you can get yourself a copy for 99 cents. Or you can go to booksaremypeople.com. Eva, what are you going to be reading next?
Well, I'm in the middle of an historical mystery, I guess one would call it, called The Last Cobblist of Lisbon by Richard Zimler. And next on my list after that is The Drowned World by J.G. Ballard. It's come up across my radar a couple of times recently, and I figured that means it's time to read it.
I am going to be reading The Lies I Tell by my friend Julie Clark. All of the books we talked about are also in the show notes and link up to my bookshop.org shop, Books Are My People. Eva, it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure being with you.
Everyone, go get yourself a copy of How to Bury Your Dog, and I'll be back in 2 weeks. In the meantime, I hope you all have a wonderfully bookish week.